It's time to meet up and catch up at the Weekend Water Cooler. Now, here's your host, Gene Bolduc.
Welcome to the Weekend Water Cooler. I am Gene Bolduc, your host. I am joined today by my good friend, Mark Margopoulos. Mark, it's always great to have you on the Weekend Water Cooler. Thank you for joining me.
Glad to be here. Always enjoy it.
Always fun. I never leave a mark, so to speak. anybody who's Mark is running once again for county commissioner, and I would invite anybody who's a candidate for anything to come on my program, because I'm a big believer in respecting the process of getting into the arena, no matter what the field is. And however it comes out, I've run for office unsuccessfully once myself, and I know that it's difficult. It holds you up to a lot of scrutiny. A lot of people are up to that scrutiny. Some are not. Hopefully, the campaigns will flesh out where everybody stands so that everybody knows what they're getting in a candidate. And whatever you're running for, good luck in the campaign is my first piece of commentary about it. So let's dive in and talk about some of the things that you've – let's talk about what you ran for the last time you ran – And how you think those things have turned out so far. You know, it takes some time as you come onto a board to kind of get your feet wet. And I think that the wise elected official, newly elected official, doesn't say that much in the first months or even year. Because you really do have to, even if you've studied these boards, you do have to kind of get your feet wet in process and in how to get things done within the dynamics of that newly elected board. So what did you feel like was the most important thing as you were running last time, and what turned out to be the most important thing?
Well, let me come at it from a different angle and eventually answer that. So, you know, I've been living here since 1971, except for a few years in the 70s. And, you know, starting in the early 80s, I was involved in community issues, mm-hmm. nuclear power, nuclear waste, environmental justice stuff. And, you know, through the 90s, then I began serving on county boards, and I was on the Iwasa board, and on and on. And when I was elected, I thought, you know, I'm as well prepared as anybody that I've seen run, and I know exactly what's going to happen. Well, you don't know
until
you're sitting in that seat.
Yeah.
It's so different, right?
Yeah.
I mean, one of the things is, and you mentioned having other candidates come on here, I would encourage them to, because there are so few opportunities for the public to know what goes on, especially at the county commission level. The the local media, I mean, CHL is one of the leaders. I would say CHL and the Daily Tar Heel are leading in covering the issues in this area. There's so little knowledge out there about what we do.
Yeah.
And so campaigns are a great opportunity for people to have access to information and have discussions about the issues. So one of the things that I discovered when I got on the board was that you can have an effect in a lot of little ways.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of behind-the-scenes stuff or just little small suggestions. You can weigh in. Like, hardly anybody comes in there like Superman and champions one issue and single-handedly,
and just rams
you know,
it through.
Changes the course of history, right?
Thank goodness, right?
I know, really, it could get backfire.
Oh, my goodness. Can you imagine?
But, you know, little things like, for instance, in the budget last year, I suggested that I had been meeting with a group of people in the area who are interested in vocational training.
Mm-hmm.
Home builders, business people, community activists, chamber of commerce folks, you know, recognizing that we need to offer more opportunities to young people to make a good living in the trades.
Right.
And so I asked that $20,000 be in the county budget, a real drop in the bucket compared to our budget.
Right.
That would be money to study the feasibility of, mm-hmm. of such a facility, an institution in Orange County, and mm-hmm. got in the budget, and we're going to have our first meeting in January with the Chamber of Commerce actually is going to lead that study. So that's just an example of something that just sort of happens
that's
out
really
of sight and, you know, is likely to blossom into something, you know, not – I mean, all I did was use my position as a commissioner to get some seed money, and other people are going to really bring it to fruition. But there's little things like that that are really satisfying that can make things happen.
That's also empowering the people who are behind that idea to kind of walk them through, well, let's start with looking at it. Let's get some data. Let's do a study. And here's how to bring that to the commissioners and get the commissioners to sponsor that. Let's get the business community involved. It's sort of educating that group of advocates.
Right. So one of the things that I've learned as a commissioner just participating in these community issues and discussions is you kind of wait until you see where you can help.
Right.
Because it's a very unique position to be an elected official. And you can help in ways that nobody else can. And so just trying to be alert to that. And, you know, the big issues are often the result of collaboration amongst not only fellow commissioners, but staff.
Right.
We have great staff in Orange County, I must say.
Yeah,
it's been a real eye-opener and a real good feeling to know how competent our staff is.
Yeah.
We get so much done, and we end up being the face of the county and getting a lot of the credit for it when, it's debatable whether we deserve as much credit as we get.
I have to, without sounding like I'm slighting all of you, I think that's exactly true. And, you know, when I worked for a publicly funded agency, our board took a lot of flack, I guess, and occasionally got credit. But everything that they were talking about is stuff that we were doing as staff. And you're right. I mean, the staff, generates, some 85% of just the sheer volume of work that's involved to do some of these things, especially if there are policy changes. It's unbelievably complicated.
It's democracy in action. You know, it's complicated. The elected officials are sort of the political face, and the staff get to work, for the most part, outside of the political winds that blow, which works out really well. It's a good arrangement.
Thankfully,
You know, so we do a pretty good job in Orange County.
I'll tell you something else. I've mentioned this many times before, but I think something that the Orange County government staff does that more citizens should appreciate, I'll put it that way, is that Orange County has a very, very, very high collection rate on its tax base.
Yes.
And, a lot of counties, they have, they have tax policy and they publish, they send your tax bill and whatever. And they may collect 80% of the taxable base that's out there. And Orange County's number is like 98%.
That's true.
Or better.
It's really,
and it's,
really
it's
amazing.
Impressively high.
Yep.
And you know, to me, that says, look, we're only taxing you for, what we can get, from the actual tax base. And we're going to, as a taxpayer, I'm very happy to hear that they're going, they're chasing everything down.
So you know,
very
thing,
good at it.
Another thing that really impressed me upon assuming the seat and sort of getting used to what was going on was, when you run for office, when you first assume office, you have certain key issues that you focused on. And, you've learned a lot about them and you feel like you can get on the board and really have an effect, and to a certain extent you can. But then when you get on the board, you realize the full breadth of responsibility that you have, especially as a county commissioner, when we're dealing with social services, affordable housing, water quality, environmental protection, public safety, education, down the line. And all of a sudden, every one of those has needs.
Right.
I mean, I delivered Meals on Wheels for Orange County and Missions, Orange Congregation and Missions, for a while before I became a commissioner. And I would go into these homes where the seniors would be, they might as well be outside, right?
Yeah.
The houses were just leaking air, cold winds blowing, heat in the summer. And, we put certain amounts of money into helping them. And then you go to social services, and it's very sobering how much money we would need to help all the kids that need it.
Right.
And then the schools come to you and say, we want, this much money. And and that happens with every department.
Right.
The sheriff's office comes to us and says, here's what we would like. And we go, we got to talk about this.
We just
don't print money here.
Right.
So that's a real sobering responsibility.
There's so much more balancing that you have to do as an elected official versus an advocate for that single issue.
Absolutely.
You're like, you know, look, this issue is really important. And it is. I mean, you and I worked on the Housing Authority Board. And to us, you know, look, this is really important. It impacts all these other areas, almost every other area that you just talked about. And, it's a critical need of citizens.
Right.
But we're not in advocating on that issue, we're not having to consider and strike the balance between and among all of these other issues. But the commissioners are.
So we would say, well, just take $50 million and make a huge impact on affordable housing, right?
We'll spend it wisely, we promise.
And then the next thing is, okay, that means raising taxes.
Yeah.
Okay, then what about the seniors that are living in their homes and low-income people, right? So you have to look at everything as a system, as an interconnected web of
as
needs,
and
that is, it's just sobering.
That's a very different perspective of being elected versus being an advocate. So, and a lot of people really can't make that transition very well.
No. A lot of people, they come out of whatever environment they come out of, and they sort of stick to that single issue thing. But I mean, I must say, I was saying how different it was being an elected official. My experience did really pay off because it was about a year in when I started to feel like, okay, I'm starting to feel
how this
machine works and how to have an impact and how not to get in the way, you know, which is part of
it. Don't get caught in the gears.
And getting out of the way sometimes is also a good strategy.
That's true in life. That's so true in life.
Yeah.
Well, we're talking with Mark Margopoulos. We're gonna come back and talk about even more fantastic issues and great solutions that he's got up his sleeve for the next time around. You're listening to The Weekend Water Cooler on 97.9 The Hill. And we are continuing with our good friend Mark Margopoulos, and we're talking. We've covered how it is to transition into being an elected official. Oh my goodness, as if that ever fully happens. I mean, it probably doesn't. I mean, one thing is, I saw Earl McKee the other day, and I said, when he left, I said, "You only have three more meetings after this, right?" And he said, "Yeah, something like that." The other thing I think people don't appreciate is that, you know, your time is not your own. You don't get to kick back every Saturday and chill like you used to, I'm sure.
Yeah, well, things happen too, right? I mean, I'll say that, you know, elected officials they have the option of doing as much as they want to a certain extent or more.
Right.
So if you want to, you can take advantage of a lot of opportunities when people email you about a certain situation they're in or an idea, and you can pursue those. So, I mean, it's really the opportunity of a lifetime, too, to have an impact on the community.
That's true.
So I try and, you know, do everything I can in the, you know, relatively short time that I get to serve. So, it's fascinating to me to learn about my community, meet so many people, and learn more about where I live.
Right.
That's something I've always enjoyed doing. So this is what better place to
do it. If you're a people person,
it
it's a good business to be in, to be a local elected official.
Yeah. Yep.
I just saw Lydia Lavelle the other day in the grocery store. And I was like, you know, hey, and I often see her. We happen to shop, guess what, at the same grocery store. And, you know, I just saw her in passing, and I thought, you know, that's the other thing. It's you're never just anonymously at the grocery store. Sometimes people just, you know, won't leave you alone to just do the ordinary things that you have to do, which may, and I'm not saying this about Lydia, I just want to be very clear, which may mean that if you need to buy any embarrassing products that you need to go out of town to do it. But she's so famous, she probably couldn't get away with that anyway. Mm. So no aspersions on Lydia. She's always, I always see her at the grocery store, and she's always very friendly and accommodating to my greeting her and asking her anything I want to ask her.
She's great to work with.
She's terrific.
And
she's very generous with WCHL too.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you about a couple of things that I saw on your campaign website. And these are things that I know about you anyway, but I made myself a list because you're a busy guy and I can't keep track of you. tell me about the Climate Change Council, and you've been very involved in getting this established. And what is this group going to do?
So we have been meeting since September. So we've had four meetings, which is not a lot of meetings considering there's 25 to 30 people around the table.
Oh, wow.
So it's, you know, the proverbial frogs in a wheelbarrow situation.
You got that many people to show up to four meetings?
Yeah, well,
is there,
that's
like
how many
really
members...
good food or something? Or what is
well,
your secret?
We don't get all 25 at one time.
Oh, but, okay.
We get, you know...
Do you get half?
15 to 25.
Yeah, that's
we usually
pretty
get
good.
18 or 20. So at any rate, we have made great strides, and what we have around the table are representatives from agencies and organizations around the county, schools, governments, AWASA, both NAACPs. We have student representatives. Mm-hmm. I really wanted to get youth representatives on the council, and that's been a great success. We have high school reps and youth reps from NAACP.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing that we realized, and I give a lot of credit to Brennan Bauma, our sustainability director for the county, who's the staff person for the council. You know, we talked about what do we do when we don't have funding, right? There's no
right.
special funding for this. So he recognized that the strength of the council was all of the things that the representative groups were doing.
Right.
And so we are committed now to doing a gaps analysis where we list all of the organizations
right.
and all of the different actions that they are taking or that is happening anywhere. Right?
Right.
So we can go down the list and say, okay, five people are doing, you know, energy efficiency studies in their buildings or whatever.
Right.
And so we can get them together and say, you know, don't duplicate. You know,
right.
See what you can learn.
Right.
Make it more efficient. We can find areas where no one is doing some particular
right.
action, and we can say, okay, that's an opportunity.
Right.
So I think that's going to really bear a lot
that's
of fruit.
Fantastic.
Right?
Yeah.
And we also are looking into forming a committee that does outreach to disenfranchised communities
right.
to make them aware of what we're doing and to learn what they need.
Right.
In terms of really
right.
resiliency,
right,
for the most part. So I really feel like we've made a lot of headway, and we're beginning to really focus. And I'm certain at the end of the year, we're going to really celebrate what it has become, and it will continue on.
You know, that sounds a lot like what we did a very long time ago, more than 25 years ago, I think, with the AIDS Service Agency, which is to identify, and we had a similar size group, and we had you know, government, private sector, volunteer organization. We had a lot of organizations represented, and the first thing that we tried to do is an assessment of what were the services that existed.
Right.
So,
yep.
especially with that many groups around the table, it's a big deal to do that assessment of what do we have. We know that we've come together because we're all concerned about the same issue, but we don't know really what our inventory is of services that exist.
And a lot of value in that, right? I mean,
it's
people really appreciate
value in it. Yeah.
Learning
to
that.
All those organizations,
yeah, sure.
and to the public. A big piece of value for all of us was that we were trying to avoid overlapping and redundancies in precious resources for, you know, what was a crisis at the time. And, you know, we ended up identifying that a core mission for the agency was to build the group home that we eventually built in Carrboro for people who were living with AIDS and who were involved in the clinical trials at UNC. Charlie Vanderhorst was a, you know, important person in that effort.
Yeah.
Because he was, you know, he was leading that investigation at UNC as a researcher. And I mean, gosh, the, you know, identifying sites for where that could be built and, you know, how are we going to do that? And we had lawyers who were helping us. We had people donating property or trying to, and of course, you know, donating money. But the main thing was we needed to feel sure that we knew once we started having resources, what the heck were we going to do with them? And that's a lot more work than it might initially sound like. You can you can bring together a group like that, all very well intended, and they can be so interested in, you know, hitting the ground running and making tracks and making change and getting things done, that they inadvertently run into the dead end alleys of things that have been tried before.
Yeah, it's like having a dog team all running in different directions.
Exactly. And then you get them all together, and then you just have a pack that takes you wherever the scent is the strongest.
Yeah, right.
But that may not be where the need is. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad to hear that you're doing that, because it's a really important issue when you have, you know, the coordination might be the product, you know.
For now, that's a great direction. I feel really good about it.
It's a good first stage.
Yep.
Well, that's terrific. We're gonna coordinate ourselves and take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk some more with Mark Markopoulos. You're listening to The Weekend Water Cooler on WCHL 97.9 The Hill. And we're back. We're back with Mark Markopoulos, and we're just chatting away about things. And, you know, this happens to me all the time, that I end up in some great conversation during the break, and then we have to recreate it during the program. So I just decided to just hit the button and let's go again. So Mark, you and I have a history with affordable housing as advocates. So tell me, you know, where you are on this, you know, as a commissioner, and where you think things are, and what the big thing is that's coming.
Well, we both know we have an affordable housing crisis.
Yeah.
And we need to take advantage of every opportunity that we've got. And the three governments, Carrboro, Chapel Hill, and Orange County, own the Green Tract, 166 acres right next to the Rogers Eubanks neighborhood. And we need to move on that. We've been working together slowly with Carrboro and Chapel Hill to try and come to an agreement on what we're going to do there.
Right.
And we were on track to move forward and had a snag. Chapel Hill, I don't quite yet understand what their slowdown about it was, but I want to move us forward on that as soon as possible. We have the opportunity to have the biggest affordable housing project in Orange County history. And and the least cost ratio in regard to housing to land,
right?
So we have got to move on that.
So when you develop that, will the county governments continue to own the land, and then just the houses will be sold? Like, is it community development who does that?
Well, we haven't gotten to that point to decide that exactly.
That would cut out a big chunk of the cost.
Yeah, so there's 60 acres that the county owns that we suggested after the county did an environmental study to determine where those 60 acres should be on that land.
Right.
And there's a creek that flows through there, these big hardwoods, beautiful forest. The four-toed salamander, an endangered species, lives out there. I've been out there and actually seen the salamander with my own eyes.
Wow.
It does have four toes, actually, it turns out. And has 16 toes, actually. But anyway, the county land, the 60 acres that the county owns, fits well over that really nice sort of wilderness area worthy of preservation. And then it leaves land around it that could be developed. So that's a good start. You know, the next thing we need to do is get down to the business of starting to plan actual development there.
Right. And then how do you do that in terms of, you know, getting feedback in an organized manner from the community at large? Do you do hearings or?
Well, we've been hearing from the Rena neighborhood folks for several years.
Yeah.
And they would really like to see this move forward. You know, there's road stub outs down there in the Rogers Road in the Rena neighborhood that were designed to then extend out into that area. So this has been considered for a long time. So it's a step at a time with, you know, the three governments involved. So meetings are happening on a, you know, regular basis to advance this. But it's moving slow. And I think we need to.
I'm going to ask a silly question, but is that a good thing? That it moves slowly. I mean, one of the when I think of three governmental bodies owning this jointly, the first thing that comes to my mind is molasses. Is that everything?
Any government by itself is just it's just amazingly slow.
One would be slow at best.
So anyway, just trying to work out different concerns. I mean, you know, right now it's an extraterritorial jurisdiction of Chapel Hill, even though it's in the county. Area, like the people that live there vote for us.
Right.
But it's an ETJ, so that means they have zoning control over it. And, you know, if you've been following Chapel Hill zoning and planning issues, they are not big fans of density.
Right.
And so there's an identity crisis going on in Chapel Hill in regard to how we inhabit the land within the rural buffer. I mean, the rural buffer was created to encourage density so that mass transit and less environmental impact would occur. Right. But there's this, you know, tension going on now, which I hope we get over soon. So it's a long story, but I'll just say that I'm committed to putting some extra energy into getting some affordable housing on that land because it's high time.
And then when permits and that stuff are granted, who's doing that? The county's doing that?
Well, we may at that point we could agree to just hire someone to do it
to manage the permitting process.
I don't know
process.
What that'll look like, but yeah.
So yep. And then maybe that would be responsible through the three governments, because I mean that's what I mean about the molasses, because I just look at the Lloyd Farm project in Carrboro and that, you know, Carrboro has its jurisdiction over it, but it's taking a long time.
Yeah,
and. You know, I mean, they're properly considering the impact of it because of the size of the project. Yeah.
And there again, it goes back to like all the varied things that a government has to do.
Yeah. Right?
And it changes based on like the state legislature can throw a monkey wrench into something at any time.
Oh, they would never do that, Mark.
And then all of a sudden you have to deploy staff to deal with something and not deal with this. So it's just the nature of the beast.
It's the joy of it. Yeah. It's the joy of it.
Well, there is joy occasionally.
Yeah, there's joy. It happens. It happens. And you've mentioned already your role with SWAG.
Mm-hmm. The Solid Waste Advisory Group. The mouthful that it is.
Now, that's a fun bunch. I remember hearing somebody from the former Alder people. One of their representatives, and I want to say it was Jackie Gist, but I'm not positive, talking about that group meeting every other Friday night for a while, and there was some description about meeting about solid waste over pizza that just always cracked me up.
Yeah,
it just sounded like they did everything they could to make it fun over such a. Shall we say dry, difficult topic to get people really jazzed up about?
Well, fortunately, we're not meeting on a Friday night, so that's a good thing.
So you're not doing that,
but it's pretty exciting. We have a relatively new director who's really really enthusiastic about moving things forward, and we've been shipping our waste over to transfer stations in Durham, one in East over in East Club. And then one at Research Triangle Park. And trucks are driving, 200 miles a day. It's costing, $1 million a year or so to drive those long distances. And it's long been a goal of mine to have those transfer stations within Orange County so we can have a short drive and we can, take care of our own waste to a certain extent. So at any rate, I'm fortunate now to be the chair of the committee, and we're right on the cusp of developing a master plan.
Right.
And I have talked with the director about the transfer station issue, and he's totally on board with finding a solution. It's likely to be regional so that we maximize the facility.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine
that means that other communities can bring stuff there and pay fees to Orange County, I assume?
Yeah. So imagine it out near 40, maybe in an economic development district. So it's not an impact on a residential neighborhood. I mean, I think in the economic development district up around Buckhorn would be a place where it would fit in nicely. It's near the interstate. So if Alamance and Durham wanted to contribute, they're close.
It's very accessible.
Right. And so the other thing that's exciting is, and I think you might have talked about this with our chair Penny Rich mm-hmm. about a trip to West Virginia. Did you talk to her about the—
I don't know if I did or not.
Because there's a composting facility up there where they— it's a quite an amazing facility. It takes out the valuable recyclables mm-hmm. on the front end, and then it takes the rest, which some of it is like junk plastic and all the other stuff that's in trash.
Right.
And it composts fairly naturally with by blowing air up through the stuff, dries it out, and it turns it into a fuel.
No way.
And that fuel, it's like heavy lint. And that fuel is used primarily in cement plants. Now people are thinking concrete plants, like the ready mix plant in Carrboro is going to be burning this stuff. They don't burn stuff for the concrete plant. This is cement, the adhesive additive in what turns out, in concrete eventually, right?
Yeah.
But so instead of burning coal, this facility in West Virginia, you could see the cement plant about half a mile away, and they are just shipping it around the corner over there. This facility is very, very well-populated area up there, not too far from D.C., handling a lot of waste. They had six people working there. That's all it took was six people. Uses very little water. I mean, all they use water for is have a bathroom on site.
Right.
And they have water that drips over the mm-hmm. bays where the trucks come in and drop the trash.
Right.
And I asked, what's that water doing dripping down over that opening,
Yeah.
And it keeps the flies out. So, we are very serious about looking into that.
That's fascinating.
And that would also be one that would benefit from regional participation, economies of scale. So if we had a recycling transfer station mm-hmm. right next to a facility like this,
right,
it would be ideal.
That's amazing. We should do a whole show just called Talking Trash.
Yeah, definitely.
And you and Penny can come in and just talk trash for an hour.
I'd be up for that.
I think that'd be fun.
Yeah. Okay. I'll bring some pizza.
You'll bring some pizza. I'm totally in, except we promise we won't chew in your ear, listeners. Well, listen, we're going to come back with Mark for our closing moments in just a quick minute. We're talking with Mark Markopoulos about trash. I mean, gosh, this is, usually on WCHL, if you're talking trash, you're talking about Duke and basketball and stuff. And as Tar Heels, we know all about that. This could be a tough year.
We're talking resources.
This could be a tough year, by the way, for that particular trash talk.
Yep,
but we'll come back and discuss what we have in our remaining moments with Mark Markopoulos. You're listening to 97.9 The Hill. Okay, we're back with Mark Markopoulos in our closing moments here, and let's talk taxes, Mark. Tell me about has this been implemented, the climate tax?
It has been endorsed, and it's in the budget.
It's in the
budget.
So
we will likely in the next few weeks make a decision on how we spend this, what's about $469,000, a quarter cent property tax increase
in the budget. It's pretty impressive that a quarter cent property tax generates that much money.
Especially when you consider a $400,000 house, it's a $10 a year contribution, right?
Wow.
I mean,
Wow.
So it's a good start. It's really looking forward to the decisions that we make. And personally, I know that I should say that one thing that we talked about a lot was the social justice aspect mm-hmm. of climate change. It affects the least resourced amongst us more.
Absolutely right.
So how do we deal with that on the local level? And we are highly likely, I'll go out on a limb and say we will have a large component of that expenditure will be toward weatherizing mm-hmm. homes. I talked about the seniors that I delivered food to.
Right.
I mean, they would be perfect to help them. You know, every summer when it gets really hot, we have these 21st century heat waves.
Yeah.
We're getting fans out to old folks who are, suffering out there. So we're going to do that with some of the money. And then what I really am going to advocate for, and I hope that we do, I would like to see a solar array installed on a local school in a very visible area,
right,
so that a lot of people can see it. And then, of course, you're affecting so many right. people because of the children and parents and teachers that are there.
Yep.
And then you have an educational component. There's an architect who built a school in Union County. He builds them all around the southeast. This school had four wings. Each wing had its own separate electrical metering system.
Mm-hmm.
They competed against one another. They were drawing off the same solar system, but they had screens down in the hallways and in the classrooms.
That is great.
You know, real-time readouts on energy use,
right.
historical, what do we do last month? And they would, at the end of
right.
the semester, they would compare. So I would like to, you know, maximize that solar energy array for education.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it will save money for the schools.
Mm-hmm.
They can use the energy savings for school needs.
Right.
And, you know, I would propose that we do one school in one district this year and another school in another district the following year. The reason I say that and not have one in each district to start with is because you can generate more power with one system
right.
than you can if you split that in half and did two, because
right.
it's like managing two construction sites
right.
and all that
yeah,
you
yeah,
know,
yeah.
kind of thing, right?
Right?
So let's maximize it and do one school in Chapel Carborough this year, then one in Orange the next year.
Or vice versa.
Or vice versa,
I'll just
either
say
way.
As an Orange County Schools advocate.
Yeah. I mean, I was just going in alphabetical order, but
right, right.
You know, so that's what.
Do you do these at elementary schools or middle school, or what level of school do you do?
Well, that's something that I hadn't really thought about too much. I mean, I've been driving by schools and looking at the visibility and the amount of roof that they might have. Like Grady Brown,
right.
is like really visible from Orange Grove Road.
Yeah.
And it's a nice,
yeah, it's
nice
very,
roof
it's
up there.
Very wide open.
I mean, you can also
true.
Do it on parking lots. You can provide shade and, you know, cut down on the heat island effect.
Right.
By using the solar panels as awnings. So anyway, that's what I'm going to advocate strongly for as a sort of a multiplier of good effects.
Yeah, that's I mean, that sounds fantastic to me, especially because when you get kids involved in something like that, you just never know what's going to come from that. And
right.
probably something really good
yeah.
is going to come from it. The idea of having, you know, kids split into teams at the school to compete for who can do the best with. It's the ultimate science project
yeah.
for a fourth and fifth grade class.
So another aspect of it is, you know, we don't really know the extent of despair among young people. They know that things are not looking good, right?
Right.
And to the extent that we can show them as adults that we are doing what we can.
Right.
And we put it on a school and they see it.
Yeah.
And they're more apt to
right.
get that message that we're
yeah.
working for your future, right?
Right.
It's, you know, that's the heartbreaking thing.
And
it's,
that you need and want their engagement.
Right. They're the next generation of leaders too, right? So you want them, you know, to be thinking mm-hmm. about it and learning from it. So I mean, I just think that's a great way to start this
yeah,
off.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I mean, you know, as you were talking earlier about having youth involved in the climate council and having that representation and having them involved in the planning process for doing this would be a great idea too. And having them as
exactly.
you know, planning
yep.
partners and
totally
and promoting it and Mark doing having them handle social media for promoting this as it's coming to life
mm-hmm.
and being implemented and throughout the school year. I mean, you'd never look yeah. back from that. That would be the greatest thing ever.
So you know about the driving is exhausting
yeah.
effort? So that's a similar thing where
right.
The students were given the power to take this on, and they did an incredible job. And they
right.
really feel empowered, right, by
yeah.
by having had this effect and continuing to have the effect. So
and they
really
can teach
success.
All of us old fogies how to do some of these things on the technology side. It's just, you mm-hmm. know, what I think that in watching the kids from Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School, and after a perfectly horrific event, but watching them mobilize as organizers of their own community
mm-hmm.
and for their own selves. That's just been some of the most impressive and heartening
totally.
For me to see that, you know, all this stuff about oh, teenagers, they're sitting around and staring at their phones. Yeah, well, they're not just staring at their phones.
You know, the other thing that's interesting to me is most of these youth leaders are young women.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
That's
Great.
An amazing, heartening thing.
And technology, in a lot of ways, is a great equalizer for that.
Right.
Because, you know, mm-hmm. you just whoever has the ideas and can get the followers and can, you know, speak and motivate and address, you know, and do so in a relatable way.
You don't have to own your own radio station.
You actually do not. But it never hurts.
It never hurts.
If anybody wants to give me WCHL, I'm okay with it. For right now, I'm just renting the space and in the ears of our listeners. And I'm unfortunately right now, my rental time of the ears of our listeners is up. And I thank you, Mark, for joining me. And I hope that you'll come back with Penny and we'll talk trash.
I'd love to.
That'd be great. Thanks again, Mark.
Thanks.
And thanks, everybody, for joining us for the Weekend Water Cooler. Have a great weekend.
Follow Gene on Twitter at Gene Bolduc and tweet your comments and questions with the hashtag WCHL.